For our listeners in Edinburgh, Scotland, today's episode is brought to you by the Tesco Superstore at 76 Duke Street, where they have the 5-pack of Serene Toffee Squidgy Cake Minis for the low, low price of £1.35.
Serene! Squeeze the day!
Tesco, helping you spend less every day.
Tesco, every little helps.
Diamonds are forever. They are all I need to please me. They can stimulate and tease me. They won't leave in the night. I've no fear that they might desert me.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The Brothers Anderson are, this is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You asked me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is true.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen. And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road and, you know, anyway.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about the 1971 Bond classic Diamonds Are Forever, directed by Guy Hamilton, and starring Sean Connery as return to Bond.
I hope he got a ton of money for this.
Oh, he demanded a ton of money.
He got a 2-picture deal with United Artists in which he could act, produce, and direct. And the stipulation was that this was his last Bond movie.
He also got $1.2 million, which was unheard of. And he donated the entire $1.2 million to like the Scottish Education Fund or Scottish Actors Fund.
What a boss.
Yes.
Yeah, he said he was brought back owing to the huge failure that the last movie was.
I think he's on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, well, this movie, I have apologies to make to On Her Majesty's Secret Service after watching this movie. I mean, obviously, you know, On Her Majesty's Secret Service, sorry, OMS.
OMS. Because there's two S's, Secret Service.
Oh, okay.
OMS.
OMS. Sibilance. So, unlike Her Majesty's Secret Service, which George Lazenby was by far the worst actor, but did a passable job, in this movie, Connery seems to be the only actor that does even a halfway good job, and everybody else is so bad. Did you have a similar experience?
It was pretty terribly acted, but it seemed like this movie was a farce of a Bond movie.
Oh, a completely different tone.
I think when all of the actors are bad, that has to be the director's fault, right?
Yeah, I think so. Plus, it seems like they had rewritten everything. First of all, the book is completely different. For instance, I think the backstory to Tiffany Case, what she was gang raped by mobsters.
Yeah.
And in fact, most of the book was about the mob. And except for some comic relief, this is not a movie about the mob.
Well, it had mob tendrils.
Oh, no. Yeah, it had some mob parts to it. It had a whole mob, section, an act of mob stuff. But it was all very goofy mafia.
Yeah.
And then they were going to... Who was in line for this? Burt Reynolds was in line for this movie as Bond.
Yikes.
Oh, I assume there would have been more car chases.
Probably. So Lazenby declined, and then they asked a couple of other people for various reasons who declined, including Burt Reynolds, who said, well, I'm American. Bond should be British in some way. And then they actually had an actor that Broccoli and Saltzman like, but the producer said, or the like executive producer or the studio head was like, nope, we're going to offer this to Connery. And so Connery's like, yep, I'll do it for $1.2 million and a 2-picture deal. And they said yes, which, you know, brought the budget of this movie, the rest of the budget for everything else down, which is why there weren't as many special effects as they had written into it. Also, they wanted this, instead of being another Blofeld thing, they wanted Goldfinger to return as Goldfinger's twin brother.
Oh, that would have been... Actually, I don't know. It probably would have been the same.
I was going to say, it wouldn't be any worse, because in this movie, we should just get into it. The very first, like, cold open, Bond kills Blofeld. And unlike, I mean, okay, I guess like the fact that our father never refers to our mother's name, I imagine if our mother was killed at the end of the last movie, at the beginning of the movie or sometime during this movie, her name would be mentioned. Not once do they say Tracy Bond.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's supposed to be continuity, it didn't make any sense. Also, the fact that Bond is played by the actor who played an entirely different role in the last Connery Bond movie was a little distracting.
That's true, yes. With Blofeld, you mean?
Yes, yeah, sorry, Blofeld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's tough. Although, it did, of course, bring me back to Rocky Horror Picture Show. But yeah, it's crazy time.
Also, it just seemed like they crammed this into America because it was cheaper to produce.
Oh yeah, yep. And they knew they were going to do a lot of car crashes, so they went to Ford, and Ford's like, yeah, we'll give you as many cars as you need, but Sean Connery has to drive the Mustang Mach 1, which is a pretty impressive car.
Tell me the entire end of this movie is not in the book with the satellite and the oil rig.
I don't know enough about it. I assume it is, except that I know in the original script of the movie, in the poster of the movie, they have frogmen because the frogmen go and like blow up the
platform. No, I texted you a picture. There's a whole ton of deleted scenes.
Oh, yeah, including Sammy Davis Jr.
Yeah. Yeah, a minute.
Who cuts Sammy Davis Jr. out of a movie?
I know. Nobody's smart.
Well, the scene's only a minute long. I don't know why they opted to cut it. Unless there was a licensing issue with Sammy Davis's licensing contracts. I don't know.
Frank didn't like it?
Who knows? But it was only a minute and a half long. I don't know why they cut it. Now, the frogman scene that they cut out, which I have on my special effects DVD, it's about 7 minutes. And it really doesn't bring anything to the movie. So I see why they cut it, because you don't miss anything.
That's true. By the end, it's such a cartoon that it's just fine. I mean, it didn't really matter to me either.
Yeah, once he's ramming the capsule into the side of the container vessels to jar Blofeld around, you know, some kind of strange comedy style. It was some strange kind of platform rape. So,
well, okay, so let's start off on our traditional fashion, Brother Jay. You're the Bond expert, so tell me your first impressions of this movie overall.
I've never really liked this movie. So my impression hasn't changed. It's not the worst. It's not the best. It's not one that's in heavy rotation around my house. It's a C-minus D.
Brother Drew, what's your first impression, having just watched it?
I think Jason is being very kind to this movie. I did not like this movie at all, and not even in a fun way. Like, I was bored. I was confused. I was wondering if I had slept through parts of it. Turns out I checked and I didn't. This movie has now made me question whether or not I actually like Bond movies. I might not.
Well, you're going to be in for a real treat with the next 12 coming up. Or more, right? This is number 7, is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
And we've talked about 3 already.
Of the 3 or 4 that I've now, of these older ones that I've now watched with you guys, I think I've only actually, like, fully enjoyed one. And that was On Her Majesty's Secret Service.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13.
13. Excellent.
So there's Live and Let Die, The Man with the Golden Gun, The Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker, For Your Eyes Only, and Octopussy. Those are all Roger Moore.
And then it goes to Timothy Dalton.
View to a Kill is also Roger Moore.
Seven
Roger Moore. And then two Daltons.
And then...
The Living Daylights and License to Kill.
Two Brosnans or three Brosnans?
Four.
Four Brosnans. Wow.
Yeah, Goldeneye is the first one. Tomorrow Never Dies. The World Is Not Enough. And Die Another Day.
Oh, and then is Never Say Never Again in there? Or is it not part of the official...
It's not part of the set.
Oh, so are we going to do it?
Yeah, we can. Okay. Where does it fall?
It falls the same year, I believe, as...
Octopussy?
Maybe, yeah.
Uh-oh, because that was Connery's other movie, right? So, Octopussy, so that...
I want to say 1983.
Yeah, we got a ways.
Yeah, Octopussy is 83, so yeah.
Okay, so to get right into the movie, so... After the murder of his wife, James Bond, Sean Connery, is relentlessly pursuing Ernst Stavro Blofeld, played in this movie by Charles Gray. And after interrogating several of Blofeld's associates worldwide, including threatening to choke a lady with her own brassiere, or bathing suit top. Or,
no, he actually does it. He doesn't just threaten.
Oh, he actually kills her? Excellent. Yeah, they have very low regard for human life in this movie. And yet, I had the same reaction that you guys did. I actually watched this in two parts, and at first I was kind of into it, because we're going to get to it in a second. I really liked one aspect of this movie, even though it was pure cheese, and Drew didn't. But I watched about an hour 20 of it, pretty much just past almost to the end of the car chase scene with the Mach 1 in Vegas. And then I picked it up the next day, and I had to rewind it to just get back to the plot. It was so forgettable that, in one day, I had forgotten why we were even here, why were we doing the car chase. It had some very interesting elements that I hadn't seen before in a Bond movie, and we're back to some gadgetry, but it was also very strange. And didn't it seem like Bond continued on his course of just sort of stumbling into things?
Yeah, he was kind of the bumbling oaf.
Yeah, he never actually did... I mean, he did all sorts of physical spy work, but he didn't do any intellectual spy work.
No, he was mostly just getting himself out of jams.
Yeah, yeah. Which is fine if that's what you want from the movie, but somehow I think I expected more. But what I also expected more of was... So he goes and kills a bunch of the Blofeld associates, and then he tracks down Blofeld himself to this place where he's getting cosmetic surgery, or presumably making doubles of himself. And there's a little bit of subterfuge where he inserts himself into the facility. But then, in short order, he just kills Blofeld. Drowns him in a puddle of what turns out to be mashed potatoes. Which they used for consistency, but apparently smelled really bad by the end of the day.
It looked like baby diarrhea.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, they didn't expect it to A, turn brown, or B, smell so bad.
Why does it smell so bad?
thanks for the low budget, Connery.
Exactly. So, hey, at least it's practical effects, right? We all like practical effects.
Sometimes, when they don't suck.
Yeah. Well, at this point, I think we get the opening credit scene, where there's a lot of shots of, crotches with diamonds.
Yes, there are.
And we are back to a classic Moon River-type Bond theme.
So this is right after the death by baby shit, right?
Yes. I believe so, yeah. But remember, I'm going to probably, I'm following my notes here, but I'm probably going to end up making things in a little bit of out of order because, again, they weren't super memorable.
No, this movie is batshit crazy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
So after the pretty much, because it's Shirley Bassey again, it's just kind of boring theme. I mean, it was just Goldfinger.
It was very lackluster.
It was going back to the well. But then we did something that I had not never been done before. We introduced two completely, I mean, I don't know if these guys, who do these guys work for?
Mike Mutt and Jeff. Yeah, I assume that they were part of the Mafia contingent.
So they were hired by the Mafia. They weren't Blofeld's guys. They weren't Spectre guys.
Right.
Does the Mafia run the diamond mine? I assume they worked for the diamond mine.
I don't know. I don't know, but they are Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd. And let's start with Mr. Kidd, who is the goofiest looking guy, even for 60s standards, I think.
Is he the bald one?
Yeah, with the long hair.
Yeah.
He was, by the way, he was the first choice for Mr. Kidd. His name is Putter Smith, and he is a four-reel jazz bassist, like upright double bass.
That doesn't surprise me in any way.
That makes sense. That's what he looks like.
Yeah, he is a professional musician. He is not an actor. He's been in only a couple things. And they were going to, as Mr. Wint, they actually wanted to use Paul Williams.
Oh, wow.
But Paul Williams was doing Smokey and the Bandit or something.
And also probably drunk.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But they were going to kind of do like a... like what they did in Smokey and the Bandit, where they had like a big whatever, little whatever kind of thing. So Putter Smith and Paul Williams could look kind of alike, except one big and one little. In this case, we had this weirdo Putter Smith, and then Bruce Glover.
Yeah, so I was watching this, and this guy was creeping me out, because he looked like he was doing this weird Crispin Glover impersonation. And then I saw the credits, and I was like, oh... okay, they're related.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
It's his dad. Which explains a lot about Crispin Glover.
Yeah, it really does.
Oh, yeah. But no, you know what? As weird as this was, we are going to be confronted with Ian Fleming's strange relationship with homosexuality.
Yeah, because they're supposed to be lovers, right?
Yeah, oh, yeah, they're super gay. And in fact, I think they actually convinced Sean Connery that they were gay. And so when Sean Connery ended up on a flight with Bruce Glover, he saw Bruce Glover like trying to pick up a stewardess. And he like yelled from several seats away, "You son of a bitch!" Because he was pretty sure the guy was gay. So, anyway. Okay, so Mr. Kidd, Putter Smith, was doing a little bit of acting. But that's okay, because Bruce Glover was doing a lot of acting. He was overacting like crazy, in such a delightful way. He reminded me a little bit of Paul Lynde.
No, oh, he looks like Steve Zahn.
Not delightful at all.
No, you didn't like Mr. Kidd and Mr. Wint?
No, they're... I don't know what they're trying to do. Like, Snappy Patter?
Yes, definitely Snappy Patter.
It was like a smarmy Mutt and Jeff routine.
Yeah, it was not working for me. You know, on the scale of horrible to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, this is towards... Actually, this might be the new end of the spectrum. This might be horrible. The spectrum of Snappy Patter now goes from Diamonds Are Forever to Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. That's it. Most movies are somewhere in the middle. Because this was not clever at all. This was some lady saying she'd like a picture of a river, so they drown her in a river, and then in tones that almost make you think they're like sucking in their cheeks and raising their eyebrows. They're like, "Well, she wanted to see the river." Old Muppets in the balcony are better than these guys.
Well.
As I said, I kept thinking Steve Zahn when I saw Mr. Glover.
So. It was so great. I guess as of even the late 90s, Bruce Glover was teaching acting lessons, but he was advertising them by like putting up a one of those 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper with the little things below with the phone numbers that you rip off the bottom of.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So, nothing else. He was true to his craft. But we have, yeah, so we get Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, who are, it's funny because they play it so weird, and yet they're supposed to be like deadly assassins, and in some ways they are deadly assassins, but in some ways they're just goofballs.
they're assholes.
Oh, they're total assholes, yeah.
If you hired them as hitmen, you would hate them. Because they can't just shoot a dude. They've got to kill him by scorpion or try and bury them in a pipe.
Yeah, well, I have questions about the pipe thing, but we'll get there. This is not the... there was not a whole lot of, like, meteorological talk in this, unlike Heat. They didn't go to school to learn about, like, pipe dynamics or...
Yeah, I'm going to have to step away for a minute so you and Jason talk, and hopefully by the time I get back, you'll be at the pipe.
Oh, Drew does not like this movie. See, I didn't hate it. It just wasn't great.
I'm with you. It wasn't good. No, great's too far. No, this just wasn't good.
But I did. I mean, I was actually genuine when I said I would love to see, maybe not a series. That's probably too much. But it would be fun to see a movie that was just Mr. Kidd and Mr. Wint.
Yeah, he doesn't think so, but yeah. I believe that would be fun.
That would be super fun. I thought about doing that ad, and I don't think Drew heard any of it, but I thought about doing the ad, and then I started looking for, like, sound bites I could use, and there was some very interesting Squidgy Cake ads, but also some Tesco ads.
Yeah.
Because Tesco is kind of like Walmart, almost.
Yeah. No, they had Tesco tried a foray into the California grocery market. And they were convinced that they would start a new trend in groceries in the United States. And they did start a new trend called bankruptcy.
That's hilarious. So, well, you know,
pulled out of California.
Like, I love English candy.
Oh, you've shared that love with me because I go to there's Cost Plus here, World Market.
Oh. Well, you need to come back on Christmas with some Cadbury Flake bars.
Oh, I can Violet Crumble bars if you want. I can get you Flake bars,
I love Flake bars. I'm not a Crumble bar, and I'm not a Turkish Delight guy.
Do you like Lion bars?
What are Lion bars?
I'll bring you some Lion bars. Okay.
But let me tell you, there's nothing that's like a flake. And there's something special about getting soft ice cream with the flake bar in it. It's called a 99 something, like a... It doesn't cost 99p or anything. It's just, it's like a weirdo-shaped cone, but it's got basically like you would consider a scoop of soft ice cream with a half-size flake bar shoved in the side.
Hmm.
And it is delightful. Also, I love Maltesers, but now I think Regal Cinemas sells Maltesers in the theater.
Well, it's that whole thing, though, because if you buy... So, American chocolate versus...
Oh, that's true.
English chocolate
different is formulas.
Totally different. And so, if you want the real... Because they sell stuff like that here domestically, but it's reformulated with American chocolate.
Yeah, and Canadian is close, but Canadian is not quite English.
So, I go to Cost Plus and buy the actual English version. I think Drew and I walked over to... a Cost Plus right by the hotel when we were in Bellevue and got these really nice. I bought a whole bunch of candy bars that I couldn't get just anywhere.
Ugh.
Same difference. And some of them I bought some Lion bars.
Yeah. Maltesers and the Flake are the best things.
Oh, I think I had Drew eat a Lion bar because I don't think he'd had one before.
I'd had a Lion bar before. It was something else he gave me that I hadn't had that was delicious.
The Rocky Road, perhaps?
Maybe. Yeah, I'd had the Lion bars in Amsterdam.
Oh, Amsterdam. Right. Well, you may win a little bit. Although, again, there's nothing like a flake. It has not been duplicated in America.
I will be happy to procure many of them on my trips in Alaska. Since it'll be Alaska, maybe I'll get you for Christmas and you just get diabetes for Christmas.
Oh, excellent. That's all I want for Christmas. I'll lose weight, if only from them taking off one of my feet. So back from English candy and back to this movie. So we have Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd. Okay, so this is going to be a little bit of I'm just going to yada yada a little bit. This
no, you guys are talking about candy the whole time.
Yes.
Oh.
So Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd are in South Africa. We see a diamond mine in South Africa where The South African miners are smuggling diamonds in their teeth to go to the dentist. The dentist, who's supposed to look for any kind of miners smuggling things, will take the diamonds and he's going to sell them on his own. But Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd end up picking up the diamonds from the dentist, killing the dentist with a scorpion, and then the helicopter...
Why do they use this scorpion? Why?
Just to be dicks. I think Drew's right about that.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, they're just jerks. So a helicopter comes to pick up the diamonds from the motorcycle-driving dentist, and instead, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd give him the package, which turns out not to be diamonds, but instead, a bomb.
Kaboom.
Yes. And then they walk off hand in hand, almost skipping. And this must have been like the way, like they couldn't say out loud that these guys were gay, but they certainly said it with skipping. And then later they actually say it in some kind of dialogue.
As gay as I am, I have never skipped with a partner in my life.
Well, you should try it.
How do you know you're gay then?
No. I don't think you want me answering that. That's a different podcast entirely.
Yeah, because you could be British. Anyway, so...
My wife and I had a very spirited discussion centered on that very thing related to James Corden.
I love James Corden.
Oh, gay or British?
Well, really just gay or not.
Ah, okay.
Turns out just British.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the game. So... Anyway, we end up with Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd, and we're like, what the fuck is this? And then we flashback to, not flashback, we go on back to jolly old England, where M and Bond are talking about the newest thing, which is the smuggling diamonds. And they're very concerned about the diamonds are being stockpiled to depress prices, a la Goldfinger. But basically, we get a kind of a fun scene where M is scolding Bond, and they go in to meet with the diamond expert.
So I have a little book that you probably, I don't know if you can read.
The Secret World of 007.
So Wint and Kidd, Blofeld employed these two assassins to cover his tracks by rubbing out everyone involved in the diamond smuggling racket, a deadly sadistic pair that really loved their work.
Okay, so they were hired by Blofeld.
Purportedly.
Okay. So, now we think, of course, we go back to headquarters, and we know that Blofeld is dead. And, by the way, M has never seemed very concerned over Tracy Bond or Blofeld. If you remember from the last movie, Bond had to do all his hunting for Blofeld on his vacation time. And presumably, he did all of this later Blofeld hunting and finally killing on his honeymoon vacation time. The guy has never hunted Blofeld on the clock so far.
I don't know if that's true in the context of this movie.
Well, it seems to be. But anyway, but now, I mean, basically...
Why wouldn't he just be hunting Blofeld on the clock?
You'd think.
There's no motivation given in this movie for him to be after Blofeld.
Well, and of course, M is like, well, now that you've got that Blofeld business taken care of, silly goose, now we can get on with real spycraft, like diamond hoarding. And where Bond gets to talk about how what he knows about diamonds. And in the meantime, Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd are going to Amsterdam to kill more diamond smugglers. And then Bond gets the assignment to pose as a guy named Franks. What's his name? Peter Franks? Yes. A smuggler. And he gets his passport from Moneypenny in the single saddest scene hopefully we'll ever have to see from Moneypenny, where she is still pining after Bond. And Bond is giving her the coldest of shoulders.
Mr. Franks, your passport is quite in order.
Well, anyone seeing you in that outfit, Moneypenny, would most certainly be discouraged from leaving the country. What can I bring you back from Holland?
A diamond? In a ring?
Would you settle for a tulip?
Yes.
Yeah, I like late movie Moneypenny is a lot better than than these early movie Moneypennies.
Well, at least the first couple movie Moneypennies, she's sassy and flirty, but now she's just sad. I mean, it's pathetic and it's not great.
Definitely not.
Anyway, so Bond is now posing as Peter Franks, and he arrives in Amsterdam to meet his contact, a shrewd American woman named Tiffany Case, played by Jill St. John. Who, by the way, Jill St. John is lovely, but her character is no Tracy Bond. She's not super. She's fine. But she's not, I mean, she's supposed to be super skilled, but she's not. She's sort of a low-level crook, right?
She has high-tech gadgets initially. But other than that, her main talent is that she looks good in a bikini.
Yeah. Which is impressive, don't get me wrong. And there's some nice little snappy patter between Tiffany Case and Bond.
Make yourself at home. I'll be out in a minute. Help yourself to a drink.
Is Mr. Case not at home?
There is no Mr. Case. The tea is for Tiffany.
Tiffany Case? Definitely distinctive.
I was born there, on the first floor, while my mother was looking for a wedding ring.
Well, I'm glad for your sake it wasn't Van Cleef and Arpels. Weren't you a blonde when I came in?
Could be.
I tend to notice little things like that, whether a girl is a blonde or a brunette.
And which do you prefer?
Oh, providing the collars and cuffs match.
We'll talk about that later. Let me have your glass. I'll get you some ice.
Because she'd been wearing a wig and then comes out as a redhead. Anyway.
Two different wigs.
Yes, yes, yes. So later that evening, the real Frank shows up and Bond intercepts him by, and I swear to God, I thought it was part of the Happy Days opening where you see the guy pressed up against the wall like he's making out with somebody, but it turns out it's his own hands on his back. I could not find a videographic evidence of it being a Happy Days thing, but I was pretty sure.
I think it's a Laverne and Shirley thing.
I looked up Laverne and Shirley too, and I didn't see it, although it does seem like more like a Lenny and Squiggy thing. Maybe a Lenny thing. But
definitely a Lenny
thing. Yeah, but
I think from when they moved to the West Coast.
Could be, maybe. If you can find it, that'd be great, but that's just to confirm
I can't believe that I know this. So
well, that's the thing, is that all it's funny how nostalgia works. Turns out I loved Happy Days and Laverne and Shirley. Looking back at it, oh, a lot of it is not great, especially Laverne and Shirley. Not great at all.
Have you rewatched any of the Three's Company episodes?
Yep. Well, my wife could only go to sleep for a while if Three's Company was playing in the room. So I've seen...
What?
That's so specific.
No, it was very specific, yeah. Yeah. Since we've become parents, we can find that we can fall asleep sometimes a lot easier, and certainly not as not with as much finickiness. But yeah, no, I've seen lots of Three's Company, and it's all about misunderstandings.
And purported homosexuality.
Well, yeah, that was the one joke that just was like through the whole thing that they couldn't get rid of. Even when they threw Mr. Furley in there, who was gay as Christmas looking, but oh no, that was not acceptable. His brother Bart would not approve. His brother Bart. Yeah, that's convenient. Anyway, so we have this, what I thought actually was a pretty nice, like, close quarters elevator fight between Franks and Bond.
Yeah, it was both really the actors, by the way. It was too close for the camera to have stuntmen, so that's really Connery doing all his own stunting.
And it went on for longer than I would have expected it to, but I thought it was good. I didn't mind it. It reminded me a little bit of Daniel Craig Bond. No, not so much.
Not quite as bloody.
No, not at all. But for 1971, what can you get?
Not as brutal.
Yeah. But he, again, we noticed that James Bond is, he's a mighty good spy, but he's no secret agent.
No, he affects the worst German accent ever.
Well, but he also switches IDs to make Tiffany Case think that he's Franks and they have just killed James Bond. And she's like, you killed James Bond? Nobody kills James Bond. So again, everybody knows who James Bond is.
And he was carrying his own real ID on while undercover.
Yeah, well, you know, in case he needs to get to the Playboy Club, he can't use somebody else's ID.
He had a fake thumbprint, but his real ID.
Well, of course. Like I said, they didn't have a thumbprint reader at the Playboy Club. Either Hef or the Cause needed to know you. Anyway, so...
He wasn't embracing that he needed to be able to walk away in 30 seconds.
He's not. He definitely does not embrace that. You'd think after the Tracy episode, he would. He'd be all sorts of crazy out of his mind. But we'll find out when how Idris Elba plays his third Bond movie. Or maybe it'll be his second Bond movie after Tracy dies. But anyway, so they end up... So Tiffany Case is a smuggler, so she and Bond smuggle the gems to Los Angeles, bringing in a couple of keys. Don't check my bags, if you please, Mr. Customs Man. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Actually, I don't know what Tiffany Case is, because she hires Franks to be the smuggler.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, she's who knows what her thing is.
So she's just like a middleman?
Yep. But they hide the gems in the corpse of the real Franks, and they arrive in Los Angeles. Although, sorry, on the plane are also Mr. Wint and Mr. Kidd. And Mr. Kidd says that...
They're both aboard. I must say, Miss Case seems quite attractive. For a lady.
Yeah, so at the LA airport, Bond meets Felix Leiter, this time played by Norman Burton, who at first I thought was Darren McGavin, but no. And that's where we have... Basically, Felix Leiter is only good for two things in this movie. One is to receive the line, "Elementary, Dr. Leiter." Which I think Broccoli hated that line and wanted it removed. But Saltzman was like, no, we love it. Keep it. So then I'm going to Slumber Inc., a funeral home. And the Slumber Inc. mafia dudes who make Bond sit in the front seat in rather cozy conditions... for the long drive. And then we get the line.
The stiff. Deceased back there. Your brother, Mr. Franks?
Yes, it was.
I got a brother.
Small world.
Which, of course, is my second favorite line in the movie. Anyhow,
I don't get it.
Bond ends up meeting with the Undertaker, Rodney, played by Mark Lawrence, and his assistant, Sid Haig. And where do you know Sid Haig from? Sid Haig was in a whole bunch of horror movies, B movies in the 60s and 70s too. And he is Captain Spaulding from the Rob Zombie movies like House of a Thousand Corpses and The Devil's Rejects.
Oh. I did not recognize him at all.
I didn't recognize him either, but it is indeed him.
Wow.
Yeah, and so they're going to cremate the body of Franks, and the diamonds will be passed to the next smuggler, an elderly man by the name of Shady Tree, who is supposed to be kind of like a Shecky Green type.
He's an insult comic, right?
Was it Shady Tree and his walnuts or something? What was the...
Something like that.
Yeah. Awful, awful, awful. But then we have the subterfuge in the mortuary funeral home thing where Bond retrieves the cash and he's knocked unconscious by Wint and Kidd, who put him in a coffin and load him into the crematorium. By the way, I think we all know, if nothing else from the book Stiff by Mary Roach, that, oh, it takes a good 45 minutes to cook a guy in a cremation oven. It does not come out in 15 minutes and you get your urn hot off the press.
It's like Jiffy Pop.
Yeah. And if you're super fat, it takes even longer. Yeah. Anyway, so now we have a weird scene where they take Bond out of the... They rescue Bond, or Bond rescues himself. And then they...
No. Bond does not rescue himself. Bond is going to die.
Yeah, they extricate him because he gave them fake diamonds.
Ah, okay. So,
and they realized it.
So the Mr. Slumber and Shady Tree accuse him of pulling a fast one.
And they're like, where's the diamonds? Yeah. He's like, where's the real money?
So he tells Leiter, who's got the real diamonds, to ship them while he relaxes at the Las Vegas Hotel and Casino called the White House, where Shady Tree works as a stand-up comedian. Now, I think this is the old Las Vegas Hilton. Although, even though the building still exists, they lost their Hilton franchise. Anyway, it's still there if you wanted to ride that elevator, apparently.
Yeah, and the White House, Willard White, yes. Right? He becomes a very important plot character later, but sort of out of nowhere.
Well, he is the Howard Hughes. That's what his job is. He's going to be Howard Hughes.
Sort of.
So, we end up at a casino, and Bond does not play Baccarat. Sweevy. Instead, he's playing craps. And he meets a woman named Plenty O'Toole. Which, okay, so she introduces herself, "Hi, I'm Plenty." Well, of course you are. Plenty O'Toole. Named after your father, perhaps?
But I'm dumb.
So what is that? You're naming your child, insinuating that you got a big dick? Is that what that's all about?
I didn't get it.
Yeah, I got nothing.
All right. Yeah, so she's kind of bad luck, but he ends up giving her a good tip anyway. Now, apparently there's some deleted scenes.
No pun intended.
Yeah, well, apparently there's some deleted scenes where they have dinner, and there's like she actually ends up with a lot more to do in the movie, but they took most of her role out.
Yeah, there's an entire deleted scene that becomes important. I don't know spoilers. You know how she gets thrown out of the window into the pool?
Yes.
She comes back up to the hotel room and catches Bond in bed, humping it out. So she looks at the address of the woman and gets her address locally and goes to the house, which is how she ends up dead in the swimming pool. Because otherwise, there's no... why? Why is she in the swimming pool? That whole scene, all of that was cut out.
Yeah, it seemed weird also that... So it's presumably he sleeps with her. Or no, he's going to sleep with her. And she gets nearly naked. But then these Slumber Inc. guys, the goons, toss her out the window into the pool. Which they claim to not know was there. But they're doing that so that he can spend quality time with Tiffany Case?
Yep.
So she's working for the mafia guys as part of the diamond smuggling thing?
Apparently.
Well, she's going to sell them the diamonds. So they don't want anything interrupting the supply chain.
I guess. So, yeah. So there's this the scene where they all get it on.
Yeah, and this is Natalie Wood's sister,
yes,
right?
Yes, Lana Wood. Natalie Wood's sister and Playboy Bunny, I think. The Playboy Centerfold.
And she only exists in this movie to get thrown out a window and drowned in a pool.
Yes.
Off screen.
Yeah, you see her face down.
Both of
pool.
Them. Both of them off screen.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. Yes. "Hi, my father's got a big dick. He named me Plenty O'Toole. Throw me out a window."
Yeah. Could they not come up with like a lady-centric double entendre name this time?
No. Apparently not.
Oh, this movie.
So, so Tiffany's trying to get Bond to reveal the location of the diamonds by offering to help him steal the diamonds for themselves. And so he arranges for her to retrieve the diamonds at the Circus Las Vegas Casino, which was brand new. Now, I have it on good authority, although you guys have been to Las Vegas many times. I have never been to Vegas, but I've been told that Circus is something of a dive.
Oh, it's a dump. I mean, if you want it for kitsch, that's fine. But if you're looking for something quality, there's better places, in my opinion, in Vegas.
Anyway, at Circus Circus, we have this strange scene where Tiffany's got to pick up this diamonds in this bear that she wins at this shooting the water gun thing and blowing up a balloon. And a little boy objects to it being rigged. And she turns to him and says, blow up your pants.
What does that mean? It sounds very derogatory, but I didn't know what it meant.
Yeah, the guys from the James Bonding podcast were suggesting that there was a line cut or something, like where the boy says something like, you know, you didn't blow up that balloon. And so she responds with, well, blow up your pants. But the way it's edited, it's like that was like some clever line, but no, blow up your pants is all you get.
Yeah, her attitude during this sort of mirrored my own at this point in the movie. She looks so bored and put out, you know, squirting this water gun. I was like, I'm with you, sister. This is lame.
So anyway, she's going to double cross Bond and she ships the diamonds and then returns to her own residence and finds Bond waiting for her. And also finds the body of Plenty, who was killed, presumably by Kid and Wint, who thought she was Tiffany because of the wig. And we have a scene where Bond gets to slap her, which is always nice.
Actually.
Yeah, and about Plenty being killed and drowned in the pool, nobody gives a shit.
Oh, no. Not at all.
It was like, oh, well. Anywho.
Yeah, but he threatens to kill her. He slaps Tiffany. And, anyway. You said you had notes, Jason?
I just wrote down slap.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, reluctantly, Tiffany tells Bond where the diamonds are, and then they get to go to the Las Vegas airport. And the doll is picked up by a porter who takes it to a casino pit boss named Saxby, who then drives it in a van to a local filling station where they switch drivers and this little game of three-card Monte shell game thing starts, where Bond has to sneak into the van while Tiffany pulls up her Ford Mach 1, which is actually a very stylish-looking car, really. I was impressed by that. Classic muscle car. Yeah, they do this ridiculous thing at the gas station, followed by the Hick sheriffs starting this pursuit. And this is an amazing pursuit.
Wait, the Hick sheriffs came after the laboratory.
I'm sorry,
right?
Yeah, there's a little trip to the laboratory first.
With the worst driving security guards and the worst, even worse yet, buggy driving.
Oh,
three-wheeling escapades.
I'm sorry, yeah.
But before that, I was wondering what you guys thought, considering you both have just read a book called Atomic Accidents. What did you think of their high-tech radiation shields?
Well, to be frank, I wasn't really looking at the radiation shields too much, but
it was the little plastic badge they put on their lapel.
Oh, I thought that was just like a meter. But they did call them shields, you're right.
They did. It's like, what is that going to shield them from?
So, yeah, so there's a little bit of the Funkify where James goes in to figure out what's going on. But then, so his cover gets blown.
That's my favorite part of the movie, by the way, where he's actually like doing some real like spying.
Yeah. He gets his social engineering skills to go pose as somebody else and then sneaks into the heart of the laboratory to find out that there's a laser refraction specialist constructing a satellite. By the way, is this implied that they were filming the moon landing also? Like a fake moon landing?
I have no idea what the fuck was going on.
Because when he breaks in and grabs the moon buggy, the astronauts who are pretending to be on the moon are still acting like they are weightless.
This is never explained.
Yeah. Also, and I realize it was 1971 and our three-wheelers, the old rugged ones with no suspension like they had there, were, you know, several years ahead of these and more advanced than these. But especially when Connery gets on one, he looks like he is a giant riding a teeny tiny three-wheeler. It's crazy.
I noticed that. It was almost like he was riding one of those pom-pom ball things.
Oh, man. It was crazy. And they were, like, falling off their
three-wheelers. I think they were the model of three-wheeler that that mom and dad got for me when I was, like, seven.
The 125M.
Yeah, maybe. Yes. Yeah. Oh, the 125M. Nice job. Yeah, it was...
Yes, much smaller than the 200s we had. Yes.
Yeah, it was. But it had electric start.
Oh, I remember. I was a fan of that push button. Yeah. I always felt really bad for Eric.
Who had to pull start?
Yeah, kickstart the 200X.
Oh, kickstart the 200X.
Yeah, no, when I finally got to drive the 200X, yeah, kickstart it and then smash my shin. And then that one leaky tire, so I ended up riding on two wheels for quite a bit of time. Anyway, oh, the good old days.
Fun times. Way, way more fun than watching this movie.
Having to retrieve the 350R, is that what it was?
I think so.
That got stolen, and then Steve and I recovered it from somebody found it, like, out in Wasilla somewhere. I
think, wasn't that the 200?
It was the 200X.
The 200X. Because I got to go pick it up from Happy Hooker Towing.
They couldn't start the 350. They got it down, and they couldn't get it started.
That's right. Because nobody could start the 350 but Dad.
Yep.
Yeah.
He basically just intimidated it into starting.
Well, we had all these three-wheelers, and they got, what is it? Just the one, right? The 200X got stolen right out of the parents' backyard, side yard.
Side yard.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, and then through the backyard.
Yeah, in broad daylight. Some bold crap, that's what that is. But, hey, they had it for quite a while before they dumped it in Jim Creek or wherever they found it.
Yeah.
So, so we find out that they're constructing a satellite. And do we know at this point that this is what the lasers are going to be? Or we don't know quite yet?
No.
Okay.
Yeah, you yada yada the whole moon buggy chase.
Yeah, the moon buggy chase where he's...
Which is fine.
Yeah, it's not great. Plus, you can see a scene where one of the moon buggy wheels falls off. And they don't bother to, like, edit around it. It's hysterical. Because, I mean, they have replaced it in the next, like, cut scene. But, yeah, it's crazy. So. Anyway, yeah, no, just Connery riding on that machine was crazy. And the fact that he had to, like leap off of it at the end, he doesn't even, like, stop it. He just sort of jumps off it like it's poo on his shoe.
Yeah, well, don't forget, this is a man who was thrown from a moving bobsled twice in one run.
It's true.
And got back on both times.
That is true, yeah, so... Anyway, I mixed up because now we have Tiffany returning to Vegas with Bond, and they get into the car chase with the local police, who called, and this is another thing that they pointed out in the James Bonding podcast. The sheriff has like one line, and it's the most, like, incongruous line ever. He calls him, he says, "There's that son of a bitchin' saboteur." Like, you would never use those two words together.
Yeah, and weren't the hitmen posing as cops here, too?
Were they?
Yeah.
Well, okay, I guess, because what we end up with is this crazy
chase
scene where we end up having Bond drive the car, the Mach 1, on two wheels, which is a nice little scene. Also reminded me a little bit of Happy Days, because that's something the Fonz could do. And then,
catch the continuity error.
Oh, did he flip which set of wheels he was riding on?
Yes.
By the end of the alley. That's hilarious.
And, well, that was after the car chase through the parking lot.
Yeah.
Which had some bananas geography.
And it wasn't exactly a high-speed chase, but it also wasn't exactly a low-speed chase. It was just weird. So, and then Bond and Chase check into a suite at the White House, that hotel, where Felix and his men basically place them in the pleasure prison. And is that where they have the bed that's a fish tank?
Yes.
Yeah.
Because that seems like the most uncomfortable. Like, I wouldn't want, I mean, maybe just because of my sheer size, but I certainly wouldn't want to lay on a fish tank to sleep.
Yeah, that, I would just be constantly worried, like, something would crack and you'd end up with fish in places you don't want it.
I also want something that has a little bit of, like, give to it. Yeah, something.
Yeah, I mean, you're sleeping on a glass floor. It does look very uncomfortable.
Yeah. And you wouldn't want to make sweet, sweet love on a glass floor either, I don't think. At least not for, well, I don't know. Certainly not with wearing Vincent's chains, because that would get complicated.
Nice.
Yeah, so then we end up with Bond, even though they're under house arrest at the White House, Bond just decides to take a little stroll up to the penthouse by means of taking the elevator all the way to the top and then shooting his suspender climbing prongs into the side of the building, which, as spy gadget goes, are probably fine, but just weird. But then he climbs in through the top and lands in a toilet. What is that about?
Well, even rich people got a crap too.
Well, no, it was like a fish called Wanda. It was weird. But then they had a very webcam looking camera also, which I thought was very strange. I was like, huh.
Yeah, you call it a toilet. I would definitely call it more of a throne room.
Yeah, I suppose. But yeah, that yellow toilet paper there was just distracting for me.
Was that because it was supposed to be for Goldfinger's twin brother?
Oh, that's a good question. Maybe so. Yeah, I don't know. But so Bond is relieved of his hog leg, and because he's introduced by what is purportedly Willard White, but turns out, oh no, it's Blofeld, and two identical Blofelds.
He's not dead. Dun, dun, dun.
Were we supposed to know that it was supposed to be the voice of Willard White?
Well, not yet, because we still haven't met Willard White yet.
I had no idea what was happening. This made no sense.
Oh, no, it gets wackier as we go along, because we have this scene where Bond decides to, he doesn't know which Blofeld to kill, so he, kicks the cat at one of them. And
he throws the pussy cat.
Yeah.
The only time he throws pussy away.
And the idea is, the cat is going to react to the real Blofeld. But the Blofeld that, when the cat lands on it, he shoots that guy. It turns out it's the wrong guy. And so Blofeld says, "Right idea, Mr. Bond." And Bond is, "But wrong pussy." Or, "Wrong pushy." But a great ass! Anyway.
Yeah, made no sense. This made no sense. Also, What kind of monster also gets plastic surgery on a cat?
Well, also he just, like, this is the second time where something like Bond does something that you think he'd instantly be seized by minions, but no, he's told, just take the elevator down, go away now, go away. So he does. He gets in the elevator and then he gets the funky gas at the bottom. Wint and Kid throw him in the trunk, and they're going to drive him out to the desert. And when they throw him in the trunk, there's a bottle of cologne, which I thought actually came from Bond's jacket, but no.
Yeah, I thought so too. Yeah.
No, you see Wint playing with it earlier in the in several times in the movie.
I must have missed it because I was rolling my eyes so hard.
Yeah, well, So they take Bond out, and here's their master plan, and this is where it gets confusing to me. They leave him...
This is where it gets confusing?
Well, he's not dead, and they leave him in this pipe, out in this construction site where they're putting a, oil pipeline or something. But this presumes a lot, including that nobody on the crew is going to look inside this pipe, which... I think if you were manipulating this big old pipe and putting it into a ditch, it would be very difficult not to look inside it to see if there's a human being laying there.
Yes, these are the worst hitmen ever.
So And then they basically bury Bond in this pipe. And there's probably an asterisk joke about home runs, but I'm not going to make it. Then Bond wakes up smelling like a Tarte's handkerchief and apologizes to the rat that he sees there. And then this contraption comes sliding down the pipe. And I realize that if it's like some sort of measurement tool or whatever, it's called a pig. Is basically everything that goes down a pipe is called a pig?
Yep.
Yeah.
It was this doing welding or measuring or what was it doing?
Welding. Some kind of welding. Fixing.
I don't know.
Okay.
Could have been a smart pig just taking measurements.
It was a MacGuffin.
Yeah, well, definitely. So he...
Why would you pig a brand new line? That makes no sense.
So he disables the pig, and the pig crew has to go down and retrieve it, which I'm sure is a real job. And, of course, he just comes walking up out of the hole in the ground, and he just magically appears back at the hotel and poses as Bert Saxby by use of the same... We didn't really talk about the machine that Blofeld uses to sound like Wilbur White. Well, he's using the same kind of machine that M uses that he built for his grandkids or something to sound like Burke Saxby. And he cleverly gets the location of White from Blofeld. And they go up to... this is also... Credit Doug Benson and the two Matts from the James Bonding for mentioning that... Okay, let's say you are a recluse who lives in Las Vegas. Wouldn't your summer home be someplace other than just down the road also in Las Vegas? But, oh well.
Well, he's eccentric and a control freak. He wouldn't want to be that far away from his operation.
Yeah.
And how was I supposed to know from this movie that he's some sort of analog for Howard Hughes?
Because he's got the same, like, double H and double W and lives at the top of a hotel in Vegas and isn't seen much and is a master engineer.
Did we know he was a master engineer? I don't know.
Well, something.
These are some of the reasons I felt like I fell asleep during this movie, even though I didn't.
Well, we're going to have a very exciting scene where Bond goes up and battles the bodyguards.
Bambi and Thumper.
Yes. Who were, in a word...
Hookers from WrestleMania.
They were ridiculous.
Again, in comparison to what? The rest of the movie?
Yeah, I mean, they fit just
fine. This is all par for the course.
Yeah, but luckily, after they throw him into the pool through a window, and he's been very much getting his ass handed to him, but maybe he's just doing that Rocky Balboa maneuver where he lets the bad guy hit him until he gets his secret strength. And then basically he's just going to drown them for his own amusement. Like, Leiter shows up with all the CIA guys, but no, he's still going to drown these girls.
Yeah, he's getting his ass kicked by these super athletic gymnast assassins. But as soon as he gets them in the pool, he's going to defeat them by simply holding their heads underwater.
Yes. Which turns to be
They're witches, clearly.
A very effective tool.
He is such a strong, virile man.
Now, so are we to presume that Willard White is being held in the bathroom the entire time, or he just happens to be in the bathroom when Bond shows up, or is that at all explained?
Well, no, remember, he says he just woke up.
Okay, so he's just being held captive at his own summer place. He's not...
Right. Okay. So I think that scene that they don't show, which it was deleted, but it wasn't on my deleted scenes. I think he was like in some suspended animation, some cold chamber somewhere.
Oh, weird.
Because Blofeld kind of alludes to that earlier.
Oh, okay. It's still weird. And of course, who plays Willard White? Sausage King Jimmy Dean. Did you not get nice. That?
I did not recognize him.
Let me tell you just a little bit about Jimmy Dean. Jimmy Dean was a country singer who was best known. His biggest hit was Big Bad John.
Every morning at the mine, you could see him arrive. He stood 6'6" and weighed 245, kind of broad at the shoulder and narrow at the hip. And everybody knew you didn't give no lip to Big John.
Big John. Big John.
Big Bad John.
Big John.
Oh, God.
In 1963, he hosted a show called the Jimmy Dean Show, which is a variety show, where Jim Henson worked as a puppeteer before Jim Henson went off to television, Children's Television Network and Sesame Street fame. And he and his brother started the Jimmy Dean Sausage Company that was eventually bought by like ConAgra, which was taken over by Sara Lee. And yet he was still part of the management and also the chief spokesman for the sausage until like 2004, where they fired him for being too old. And he's like, yeah, they got rid of me because I was too old to sell sausage. So, of course, Wilbur White is Willard White is ridiculous. And
again, you keep saying ridiculous like that's unique. The whole movie is ridiculous.
No, it is. It is. So then we learn the...
Also, he is not a weirdo recluse.
No, it turns out he's not. Nope.
He's actually the most normal, sane person out of any of them.
Well, okay, and here's this. Here's how they find out the location of Blofeld's secret headquarters for his doomsday machine, where he's going to control his laser satellite thing.
Powered by diamonds?
Powered by diamonds, or somehow maybe the diamonds make the, maybe they intensify the refraction, blah, blah, blah. I don't know. A lot of diamonds. Anyway, but it did look really cool. I mean, it's kind of a fun little prop thing. But, yeah, so we have, you know, Willard White has this really, like, ginormous room that has a depiction of the world and all of his like laboratories and factories and everything. And Blofeld decides to put his own secret base on that little map also.
Lex Luthor style from Superman.
I don't have a base in Baja California. Dun dun. And that's where Bond goes to the oil platform off of Baja California, and we find out that, oh, by the way, there are serious consequences in this movie, again, with atomic accidents, because Blofeld triggers nuclear detonations all over the world. Presumably, thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people have died.
Did he really trigger detonations? I thought he simply just made the weapons vanish.
No, there were mushroom clouds.
No, maybe it did fall.
Asleep. Yeah, you could have, because when he hit it with this ray gun from basically War of the Worlds 1950, whatever, yeah, there were mushroom clouds. So that's a bad sign. Hmm. Oh, and what controls the entire satellite? What is it all being controlled by? What is the linchpin of this very sophisticated thing?
A pin on a wire bent over a spinny globe.
A cassette tape.
Yeah, a cassette tape is what covers the computer thing. Yeah. Although you're right, that was the representation was the spinning globe, and there is a nice scene where he's like, "Oh, the satellite is directly over Kansas right now." Well, if we destroyed Kansas, no one would even know for a couple of years. So let's wait till it swings around to Washington D.C.
Dun dun dun.
And so he is holding the world... This is actually like the high stakes we expect from a Bond villain. He's holding the world hostage. So basically there'll be only one nuclear power and he'll decide who it is. Or it'll be him in some case, and he'll take a bunch of money from everybody. He'll be the most powerful supervillain ever. Ha, 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 ha.
And why did they call it Red China?
Communist?
There wasn't any other... there wasn't any other China, right?
No,
it's just China.
I think it was to prove a point. Because China became Red China when it went communist.
Yeah. No, I understand why it's red, but... seems redundant to me.
Yeah, so we get a yada yada where Tiffany has been kidnapped by Blofeld.
Blofeld in drag.
Yeah, oh yeah, Blofeld in drag, which is also unnecessary and weird. Like, even if you put a wig on, why
he's capturing the Rocky Horror contingent.
Why would
contingent?
You have to do, like, all the makeup? I mean, come on.
He was getting in touch with his feminine side.
Yes, he's a method actor. So,
it's just a jump to the left.
I guess. Then we have this big old attack on the oil rig, and that's all yada yada exciting. And Tiffany and Bond have this weird thing with the tape back and forth in her shorts and everything. It's just all... Again, you just have to see it. Or not. And Blofeld attempts to escape on a mini-sub. Actually, there's kind of a fun tension between Blofeld and the chief scientist. The chief scientist is like, let's give up! Give up! Come on, give up!
It's called a bathos sub.
Yes. I don't understand either. I know a bathysphere is a, you know, a sphere that goes in bathos. Is bathos Greek for soaking tub? I don't know.
Not halfway.
Yeah, it's basically Bond takes Blofeld and smashes the crane. And so is Blofeld theoretically blown up during this whole thing?
Yes.
Okay. Because Tiffany uses a machine gun for the first time and gets like knocked over and falls off the platform. Then Bond dives off the platform. And then, boom, the little base blows up. The satellite is essentially just left adrift because there's no cassette tape to control it. And then they're on the... they're on like a Pacific Cruises ship called Canberra, where Tiffany and Bond are headed home on the cruise ship. But they have one last encounter with the baddies in the guise of Wint and Kid, who are dressed as waiters.
Yeah, inexplicably, Bond doesn't recognize them from when they were at the mausoleum, and they shoved him in the coffin.
Well, they knocked him out from behind, right?
Yeah, but he walked past them and he saw them.
Also, I mean, I hate to, you know, again, this is nitpicking a movie that shouldn't be nitpicked in this manner, but you'd think as a covert operator, having room service come when you haven't ordered room service would be like, oh, you almost got me. But no, he just lets them in, and they've got the most absurd cake and some shish kebab. And a claret, which is some kind of wine or liquor or something. And that's when we have, and Bond recognizes the smell of Mr. Wint because he smells like a tart's handkerchief. And he tricks him with not knowing what the intricacies of the Mouton Rothschild. So then these master assassins, Mr. Kid takes the shish kebabs. And it's kind of like, he sets the flame on them himself, right? Or do they get in
it? No. He sets fire to the shish kebabs, and then he walks towards Bond like the robot from Lost in Space. And that's when Bond throws alcohol on him, which is what causes him to be engulfed in flames.
Which, for 1971, was a pretty cool practical trick. I think they were just kind of getting that, where they could put that suit over you and put that, like, jelly fire stuff. So, it looked pretty good. He was on fire for quite a bit.
Yeah. It's a technology I would not want to be an early adopter for.
Exactly, yes. So, he ends up falling off the ship. And then, of course, this left with Mr. Wint, who engages in fisticuffs with Mr. Bond. And then Bond somehow, as they knock over the cake to find the bomb there, Bond ends up getting, like, Mr. Wint's hand through his legs by behind in a, ooh, and clips the bomb to his clothing and then also pushes him off the boat.
Ostensibly blowing him apart by his balls.
Yes, yes. And I put his face on the cover art for this episode. Mr. Wint, as he's has the bomb clipped to him and is about to be pushed off, which makes me smile. But as we've learned that Mr. Kid and Mr. Wint, how are they killed? They're thrown overboard and self-assured. Oh no, I know a dirty word. Hello.
What?
It's okay.
Did you have a stroke?
Okay, sorry. So anyway, the film ends with Tiffany, who is always the... Tiffany is always the villain. I mean, she's a bad girl. She wants to know how she and Bond can figure out how to get that satellite back so they can get the diamonds. Bond just gives him that little look like, oh, you cheeky criminal, you. And fade to credits, and Bond will be back in Live and Let Die.
Yeah. One observation about this movie is, and maybe it's because they switched Bonds in between. So it went Connery, Lazenby, Connery, and Lazenby was so much younger. This Bond seemed just visually just looks so old, even compared to a couple movies previously. To what, you only Live Twice? Was that the last Connery one? He looks so much older in this one.
Yep, I agree.
Well, it was 8 years basically
in between those two movies.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes!
Yeah. So, yeah. Again, I think this movie, like, I think my rating would be that it's mostly forgettable, except I still would like to see some sort of maybe a Sunday morning cartoon involving Mr. Went and Mr. Kid.
No.
Okay, so Brother Jay, your verdict.
Don't watch this movie. It's not worth it.
Okay, Drew, would you agree? Is it not worth it?
This is absolutely not worth it. The only reason to watch this movie is if you're like a James Bond completionist. And I don't know. Well, I guess besides you guys, I don't know why you would torture yourself. But this was not a good movie. It was incoherent. It was all over the place tonally. It wasn't fun. It didn't have the fun that you want from Bond movies. The parts where they were trying to be clever fell flat. The parts where they were trying to have a large spectacle just did not land. And I don't know if it's hard for me to determine if it's because it's really dated and it just doesn't hold up over time, or if it's just a poorly made movie. But whatever the reason, this is entirely forgettable and ultimately skippable.
Yep, I'd have to agree with both of you. It made me, though, it inspired me. I can't wait to get to the Roger Moore movies now to see how they hold up or compare.
I'm ready for a change, too. I mean, I'm kind of over Connery at this point, because especially since I really enjoyed On Her Majesty's Secret Service. I mean, Bond didn't even look like he enjoyed being Bond in this movie.
He didn't.
That kind of bugs me.
He didn't.
Well, if I draw your name for Christmas this year, I'll get you the Emmanuel collection that has George Lazenby in there.
Hey, if he's having a good time.
The Roger Moore Bond movies are very campy.
Well, I mean, if that's the tone, then yeah, go with the tone. That's the other thing, is that this comes after a movie with a brutal ending. And kind of acknowledges it a little bit without keeping that tone. Like, if it were like a Daniel Craig revenge Bond movie where he's always like angsty, but he's not.
I don't think this movie acknowledged it at all.
Yeah. Well, except that he was driven to kill Blofeld. But yeah, they never acknowledged why. And what happened to Frau Blücher? So, anyway.
Did we all just hear a horse noise?
We should have, yeah. We will later. So, anyway, so here's the link.
Wait, by the way, that is a really fucking morbid joke, now that it's been fully explained.
Yeah, that Blücher is German for glue. So.
And that's the sound of a horse being agitated.
Yes.
Man.
And it's a joke they make like 7 times in that movie, like any good Mel Brooks movie. Or a Family Guy episode.
It's a good one. Yeah.
Okay, so here's our link. Bruce Glover, who is Mr. Wint in Diamonds Are Forever. Was in Chinatown with Jack Nicholson. Who is Jack Torrance in The Shining, directed by Stanley Kubrick. We'll be right back. I realize it's like, well, 2 degrees of separation, but still.
No, but at least you used a Glover.
And I couldn't get, was it Puffy Tubbs or whatever his name was? Putter Smith.
Puffy Tubbs.
Well,
wow.
That's his rap name. Boom, 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 boom. Anyway, that's my double bass impression. So, anyway, wow. So housekeeping. Housekeeping.
I've got two.
You got two? Oh, excellent. Okay.
I've got two. One is, I was horrified listening to the Father's Day podcast, because when we recorded it, I did not get to hear the Jason Dennis story. And
it's a shocker.
What horrified me was that, Jason, that you lost thousands of brain cells from that trip to the dentist. That is a terrifying notion, because as is, it was already really sucked to follow you in school. So if you'd had even more brain cells, that would have been untenable. I already don't approve. So I'm glad you lost some brain cells. Otherwise, there just would have been no hope.
Well, you graduated high school. I did not originally, so.
Well, yeah. I mean, man, you not graduating was the best thing you ever did for me.
I'm glad I could be there for you.
Because up to that point, it was all, oh, you're Jason's brother. Oh. The realization that I would never live up.
I had no idea I cast such a shadow.
Yeah, no, it was awesome. You were super smart and a good student, so you got good grades. And you were outgoing and very personable.
Yeah, I took care of that right quick.
Yeah. So maybe I could get a couple of those, but not the whole package. So yeah, it was fun to always be a disappointment to the teachers who you had had first.
Yeah.
So yeah, to hear that you were actually dumber because of the horrible torture dentist was a very sobering realization to me.
So what was number two?
Oh, I have a health update.
Oh, excellent.
I have an official diagnosis, so maybe I get the mug.
Oh.
Ooh.
Hold on. Drum roll, please. And the winner is...
Oh, no, this is so lame, because this is going to sound very familiar to you. Post-infection Henoch-Schönlein purpura.
Wow. Yeah, that's weird. Isn't that a kid disease?
No, it's something that happens after infections sometimes. So it's I have a lot more information about it now, but it's sort of like the middle of a Venn diagram of... vascular and rheumatism and infectious disease. So it's like right in the middle of all three of those.
So does that mean it is ultimately curable?
It's manageable until it goes away.
Oh, excellent.
Which can be anywhere from a couple months to a couple years.
Oh, fantastic.
And I'm approaching being able to measure it in year, so I'm not very happy about it.
Well, at least it's not like Lyme disease or something, like, you know, those game changers, right?
Yeah. Well, I hope not.
So how do they arrive at a diagnosis?
They ruled out everything else.
There's not like an enzyme level or anything they can check. There's just it's just a commonality of all other factors removed.
Yeah, and you know, sort of, it's a collection of symptoms, and if you kind of can check all those boxes, that's what they believe it is. And they often find that it occurs after like a really bad infection, which I had like last October and November. So there's no like actual causal link. Like, they don't know what precipitates having this syndrome after an infection. But
When did you have your back surgery?
2013.
Okay.
Yeah, but last October or November, I had, that's when I had the like walking pneumonia.
So that's actually kind of scary stuff.
Yeah, it's extremely persistent.
Hmm.
So I get to go back on the steroids.
Woohoo!
For probably another 3 months.
Well, pneumonia is already persistent, right? I mean, that'll show up for quite a while.
I haven't had it. Yeah, I haven't had any follow-on effects from that, thankfully. But
well, congratulations for at least a diagnosis. That must be nice.
Yeah. At least I know what to call it for sure. But
cool. So, housekeeping from Brother Jay.
I just want a podcast where you do nothing but imitate Vincent the entire time.
Oh, if only I could.
You should just do it in character.
Do the best Al Pacino Vincent voice ever.
Oh, it's funny. When you sent that compliment, I was trying to actually do it, and I couldn't. There's no way.
I must have hit the back button on my podcast. Like the 15 seconds back. I don't know how many times he's got a great ass. I can't tell you in my car stereo how many times I played that. And then I realized I had the sunroof open and the windows down, and the guy next to me at the stoplight was looking at me like I had lost my mind. Cause I'm laughing and I'm rewinding it and laughing and rewinding it and laughing and rewinding it. So,
that's high praise.
What I really want to hear is you doing your Vincent Hanna saying a Telly Savalas line in his voice, but actually saying blah, blah, blah.
That would be awesome.
I realize that, by the way, that we do still have Father's Day stories left to tell. There's a whole segment on car stuff. But because this was almost 3 hours long,
I actually had to listen to it over 2 days.
Yeah, well, no, and like our mother was like, looked at that and was like, oof, well, I'll just wait till I'm done with the rest of them and I'll just catch up on it naturally. I'm like, well, no, if you look at the notes, there's, it can tell you where to forward to. It's like, no, I'll get there. It'll be fine. Okay.
And it was a struggle for me to get through this movie because my DVD is apparently damaged.
Oh, no.
So,
which for a completionist could piss you off royally.
Well, and it doesn't look damaged. I mean, I look at it and it doesn't appear damaged, but my Blu-ray player is original to when I bought it in a set like 7 years ago, I want to say 7 or 8 years ago. So my Blu-ray player is on the edge of its usable life anyway. And these aren't Blu-ray discs anyway. They're just standard DVDs. But it got about an hour in and couldn't play anymore and wouldn't let me skip the scenes to get past it. So I couldn't even like back into where it stopped working. So I tried playing it on my Xbox because it has a new Blu-ray player built into the Xbox. So I thought maybe that would be more sophisticated. And that didn't work. So I thought, well, my laptop, my new MacBook has an external DVD drive, which is also brand new. So we'll try that. And that didn't work. And then out of the final desperation of all, I thought, well, I have a desktop PC that's, you know, who knows, maybe Windows will prevail. And I finally got the DVD onto my desktop computer, and the DVD player on my desktop computer played it fine, no problem.
Wow. Well, at least we figured it out.
So luckily I didn't have to like jump through a bunch of hoops because there was no way. The only other option was to like purchase it on Amazon for $14.
Yeah, no, no.
Like, that wasn't happening.
Nope. Not at all.
Yeah. So anyway, so that was that. I did make it through the heat episode, but it made me laugh. So that was nice.
So anything else housekeeping wise?
I'm looking forward to next week. You've already you snuck in a reference to it, which is fun.
A reference followed by probably 7 cricket noises in a row.
I thought it was hilarious.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, next week we're going to have a music episode. The first all three of us music episode. It's going to be 1991 Nirvana's Nevermind, which seems so long ago.
Yeah, and God, it's got that secret track that I don't have that I know Jason does.
Well, that's the thing. Is like when I was thinking about it, that was the time of secret tracks.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then we got like Trent Reznor fucking everything up, where you have like 99 silence tracks before you get the songs on an album, and then you end up on older CD players couldn't play it because it didn't go up past 99. But we'll talk about technology next week. But
I have a CD that's got one of the best hidden tracks ever.
Do you have to go backwards?
Well,
no.
Have you heard Jack White has a vinyl album that just came out that I think has two separate grooves from the beginning? So, depending on where you drop the needle, you get two separate sides, and then on the inside, like what would normally be just like the where the label is. There's a separate track there that if you drop the needle in the inside, it's also, it's like every, he packed every single kind of hidden way to send stuff onto a vinyl disc on there. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. Also, we'll talk a little bit about this because, you know, Kurt Cobain could have turned into Jack White, and I don't think that's a good thing. But anyway, yeah, we'll talk. There's gonna be lots to talk about. So, next week, it's back to the grunge times.
Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on our new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts, dial it already.